copy.
Thank you. I do real good. When I forget a word, I forget it really well. Topical or topically? What does the word topical mean?
A theme.
Basically, a topic is a theme.
That's exactly right.
And when we study a certain part of the Bible, we'll get certain themes, certain, therefore, topics, certain characters, certain purposes that we're learning. And that's in a parameter. But whatever we study, wherever we are, we're studying narrative for a point, for a purpose. What does the word narrative mean? Just think of things, you can give me examples. What is a narrative?
The story.
Now, if I say to three quarters of you, we're studying God's story, sometimes it sounds like I'm saying fiction. I am not saying fiction. You each have a story. And your story is your narrative. But your narrative fits into what is called a meta-narrative, a big narrative. There is one meta-narrative. Now, our culture today, historically, philosophically, blah, 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 ever since the postmodern days, do not believe in meta-narrative. Well, what would the big story be, the meta-narrative? Whose story would that be?
God.
It's God's story.
Yeah.
So if you don't believe in God, of course, you don't believe in a meta-narrative. But you will see, and I'm going to emphasize the rest of our study, how all these little parts fit into that big whole. So what is meta-narrative? It's the big picture. For want of another way to say it, it's the big picture. But when we're studying narrative, which is what we are studying, what narrative, what story are we studying right now?
Joshua's story.
It's Joshua's story, but who else's story?
Israel's.
We've talked about Moses. He's been brought up. We just kind of would have finished Moses. So it's sort of that transition from Moses to Joshua. What else?
Israel's story,
which includes the land. It includes, and you've seen it in your lesson today, it includes the priests, right?
Yes.
So you have the people, the priests, and Joshua all separated out and for a purpose as you look at it. So as we go through this and I ask questions, we're building that format. And what we did last week, as we think about it, we focused on Joshua, and you had a zillion and a half cross-references. Why did you have a zillion and a half cross-references?
Because the book of Joshua doesn't explain his biography.
You don't get his history. You get part of it. You get it actually present, don't you? And actually, if I were going to put it into part of his story, and I would make a topic, that would be the topic of Joshua as leader. Okay? But what we got last week was the building of Joshua's character and why he was the leader. Okay, so we have Joshua, and we know the book is called Joshua, but what, so far, what is it about? What did you look at this week?
We have Rahab,
and what is the position that Rahab plays in this story?
She gets a lot of position.
Certainly in chapter 2.
She's faithful to Joshua with hiding the gold.
So we see this woman. Is she a Jew?
No.
She's not a Jew. Why would we ever study somebody who wasn't a Jew?
Because she plays a part in the narrative.
And not only in this narrative, but she plays a part in the narrative of Christ's history. What? She's not Jewish. So maybe it's not just about a chosen people that are only one thing. And we saw that when we went through our covenant and we went through Galatians 3, we saw that those who are the children of Abraham are who?
Those who believe
with God.
who are believers. That's exactly right. We have that covenant with God. And we saw by looking at chapter 12 in Genesis before chapter 15 that faith was to the whole world. Because Abraham did not become a Jew until after verse 6 in chapter 15. And at that point, he was simply
a pagan.
He was a pagan out of Mesopotamia, the land between two rivers, which today is Iraq. Do they look like holy people to you today? Nope, weren't anymore back then. And we went through the Babylonians, which are the Chaldeans. We went through the Syrians before that, and after that, the Persians. None of them look particularly anything godly, and God usually used them to chastise Israel, but they were not godly people. And here is this woman. So we're going to look at her story. What else are some of the other topics you had just as you looked into this, your lesson?
Well, the Ark of the Covenant.
You have the Ark of the Covenant. We have the Ark of the Covenant and the Jordan River. Okay, what else?
Circumcision.
Let's start writing some of these down. Okay, now, we have Rahab, and we said already that she is a character study, so we have her down here. And just to finish our review, we had the statement, be strong and courageous, and we did look at that, and that is a topic, but what does that topic do? It tied this to this, didn't it? Because what was Joshua and the people to be strong and courageous about?
Possessing the land.
Possessing the land, because what's going to happen?
They're going to have war.
So that all tied together. So now we're in the middle of beginning that process with Rahab. And what are some of the other titles you've given me? Somebody said Ark of the Covenant. What would Ark of the Covenant fit with? Let's just put it out there by itself.
Moses and the tabernacle.
Okay. Well, we're going to keep it in our perspective.
Delete Moses.
Well, we're not deleting Moses. We'll look at his roots later, because it isn't just the Ark of the Covenant, is it?
No.
What is the Ark of the Covenant represent, and where does it fit in any of it?
The presence of God.
It's the presence of God, and that's the important thing to get out of why the Ark's handled the way it is in these chapters. Because, well, we'll talk. I'm going to let you talk about it, but right now, okay. What are some of the other subjects?
Circumcision. You were going to write circumcision.
Circumcision. Yeah. And where would I put that? Would I put that under anything?
Topic.
It is a topic.
I think it would be under strong and courageous.
Actually, if I wanted to put it under something, it would be obedient, wouldn't it? That must be the first battle. Right? That's the first battle.
And then the Passover.
Isn't circumcision an act of faith?
Yes, it is. And in that sense, who are they being faithful to?
Obeying God.
So I would actually kind of put it under the Ark. Because you guys said earlier, you can put it out there also by itself. The problem is I only have so much room. But it was a topic, and we'll look at the topic. But the topic is being faithful to the same thing that the Ark of the Covenant is supposed to be reminding them of. What any other subjects?
Passover.
And what was that tied with?
That was actually tied with the lamb.
And
remembering what was done in the past.
Got a lot of remembrances in this chapter, and we'll hit the remembrances. Why do we have remembrances?
To help them to be strong and courageous.
To help them to be strong and courageous, remember from where they came. But even
their children.
Pardon?
To teach their children.
Very good. So we'll talk about that too.
To encourage them.
To encourage them. Why do they need encouragement?
Well, if they remember what God did in the past, that'll help them press on with what God's asking them
to do. Is this aimed, just as we look at this, we're getting an overview here, is it aimed just at Israel?
Mm-hmm.
What did Rahab say to him?
Rahab's story is amazing. She reveals that
She's kept all this in her head
for how long?
40 years.
40 years. The people of that that city know about Israel, and they're afraid of them, aren't they? So what it to make them more so, what does God do?
Oh, with Jericho? He tells them to march. I picture the bad.
Well, but not yet, not yet, because we didn't get to that, those verses. I know it's really hard. I know the and not only that, but he names that city. He goes on Gilgal, which is means circle. It's like, what is that?
The Lord let Rahab cross with the people.
Before that, yes, they did.
They heard.
No, that's right. They did, and they heard.
They
and what
heard
did they hear?
About the Red Sea. They heard about Og and Sidon being destroyed, and the leaders' hearts were melted.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, not only was Israel's heart built, but their enemy's heart was melted.
Okay, anything else you want to bring as a... Well, we had things, you were saying, crossing and... Anything, what goes with that? Anything in particular, crossing the Jordan...
A memorial.
Yes. Memorials. What are memorials?
Remember. To remember what God did.
Why?
For future generations when they ask what does it mean.
Because people forget.
Because people forget. So it's not only for future generations, but what would you say from what you said earlier? To build them up.
Right.
To build them up. To remind them. I mean, how many times do we go, oh, God's never going to this, blip, you know. I mean, I'll give you a really silly one for us. But I've told you guys this before. We've owned 13 cars, and we've never bought a single one. Not ever. And the Lord has very obviously shown us that He is the source of car giving. But I keep wondering, should I start saving money for the next car? Because I don't want to be presumptuous, you know. And then it's like, okay, is that a lack of faith? Or are you not being presumptuous? And it's going, well, did the Lord tell me to do that? Or am I just, like, doing that? Because whenever I start saving money and isn't the Lord who's telling me to save money, guess what? Somebody needs it right away.
That would be okay, too.
Time. And it's gone. So it's like, okay, I got it. I still don't know what the answer to that is yet. I'm waiting to hear him tell me. Let's see, what else do I want to put? Okay, let's think of the water. What else is related to the water story?
Crossing the Jordan,
yep, that water.
The banks were overflowing because it was...
Banks were overflowing because it was... Anybody look up, have any idea how deep or wide this river is?
No,
it was a flood stage.
Walked through it with...
Yeah.
What a ground.
I'm still confused whether the priests were standing on the edge or in the middle. Does it seem to say both?
Both.
Yes, it did.
Started.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah, and then
they walked into the water, the water
heaped.
Stopped.
It heaped.
Went into a heap. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, in it places, it's about as big as it's still a Stillaguamish.
Yeah, it's and it depends on the time of year. And the time of year, honestly, they could just walk across it.
Yeah.
And let's say that was this time, because people said that, oh, it's no big miracle, they can just walk across it. Okay, so what was the miracle?
It was a flood stage.
Let's pretend it said it's weak stage.
It was on dry ground.
It was on dry ground, and the water heaped up.
Yeah.
How far did it heap?
Way back up.
16 miles back.
It's actually 20, but yeah. 16 to 20 miles.
And they could see it. I mean, somebody wrote that. Somebody wrote that.
Yeah.
Somebody noticed.
Somebody, well,
noticed that
what else is a testimony to the people that lived in that city that it heaped back up to?
Yeah.
That'd be a little scary when suddenly the river's like, this is a nice, calm, quiet little river, and all of a sudden it's coming backwards. I mean, that's got to be weird.
It's never closed that way.
Have you ever been in a place that was like a valley-ish area and suddenly huge amounts of water comes down? Well, this is backing up, so that's got to be... I mean, you almost, if you're hiking, you have to be careful in those valleys, that if there's rain or water of any kind, you can't just... You have to know how to get out of there fast.
It would be like the river down here when the tide switches.
Mm-hmm.
you know, when the tide's going out, it's running downstream, but when it switches, it starts running back upstream.
Which is the whole mouth of the stream, yeah.
Only multiply it.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Hundreds of feet.
Mm-hmm. And in places like Israel, there's what they call wadis, W-A-D-I,
mm-hmm.
and they're dry. They're
mm-hmm.
dry.
Most of the time.
But most of the time. But within seconds, within day, can flush.
And you're gone if you're down there.
Yeah, you have to know where those are.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, Debbie, but it doesn't actually say it flowed back upstream. It just says it was cut off.
No,
it was
no.
Well,
right, but yeah, but like heaping up, but it wasn't flowing backwards.
Well, you know, though, I think we have this picture. At least I always have, like with Egypt. We have this picture of two walls going like for thousands of hundreds of miles almost, you know. It's not quite that picture. It's more that. Which heaping up means it like swelled up high, but it swelled up all the way back 20 miles. Mm-hmm. So it didn't swell 20, it swelled 20 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it looked like because we don't have pictures of that.
You know, in 1927, back in the area where Adam was, they had, it's like the banks are really, really high on either side. In that
which
area.
Is the Dead Sea.
And they had an earthquake,
mm-hmm.
and so the banks caved in and stopped the flow of the water. You know, so just like a dam would be.
Right.
And so then the water overflowed the area. And that's kind of the picture that I got. I mean, it doesn't have to have been that way, but God often uses those kind of, you know, he could make an earthquake to have that happen, so.
That's almost the reason I know it wasn't hugely deep at that time, because this is the Dead Sea we're talking about. Everything goes into it and nothing comes out of it.
Yeah, the results were the same in 1927 as...
They say in the worst of the season, it can be 150 feet deep and a half a mile wide. But that's the very worst, and that's in our harvest time. Other times, I think they could probably pretty much just walk across some of it. Because, how do you know that from your text?
Well, it's in the spring, because they had to pass over.
Okay. Which usually is more wet. And that isn't harvest, is it?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they just had to pass over because they had the Passover and hadn't had it for 40 years.
Well, they dug out the rock.
It says in verse 15, it was the days of the harvest.
Yeah.
But we don't know again what harvest, because we have several harvests. That's what the whole Pentecost
is.
Yeah. But there's something that lets us know.
Spring because of night sun.
Oh,
of
right.
The Passover.
It was Passover.
Oh, I
know. Okay, so how do we know about how deep this river is, the Jordan, through its yearly stage without numbers? I'm not asking you how many numbers you can't. What did they do in the middle of the river?
It's not.
They built a pillar.
They built a pillar.
Right.
Out of what?
Stone.
And how big were those stones? I mean, they weren't that big because who had to carry them?
They put them on their shoulders.
Right. Yeah.
But that's not this.
Right.
No,
right.
Exactly.
It's more like probably big as they could get would be like this.
Well, one man rock.
So you have 12 of those.
And they couldn't stack right on top of each other.
No, they have to be pyramid-y almost.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
But that was a testimony. It was a memorial. They had two of them, right? They had one in the middle of the river, and where
that's
was it?
The one that Joshua did.
Right, and why was it there?
To remember that that's where the priest stood with the Ark of the Covenant.
Okay, so we have that one.
And one where they're going to build.
It doesn't do a whole lot of good to have a memorial in the middle of the water if you cannot see it.
Yeah, that's what I wondered.
So, on
the drive up, you'll see it.
That's what I'm thinking. That it during the different seasons of the year, you see it, you don't see it. So it's not 150 feet at that point. It's he put the memorial in the middle of the river that they would see it and remember. And they put the memorial on the outside that they would see it and would remember. You have a scowl. Got a question?
I didn't until you said
that they put it on the outside. I thought it was on the outside.
Well, let's read. Okay. So we've got our parameters, though. And these are the questions I want you to be thinking as we go through it. When I talk to you about observation and interpretation, that's what we do when we go through and discuss the lesson. But we always have to come to application. And application is our part in the narrative. Because even though we're talking about something that had thousands of years ago, we are still to be gleaning out of it that which we can apply in our lives. And so we even need to, as we look at Rahab, as the covenant, as circumcision, although circumcision isn't going to be our big, the crossing the Jordan, the memorial, the priests, the people, that was the one thing we were missing. Because God speaks to Joshua, the people, and the priests in separate, or has Joshua do that at separate times. And maybe we'll come up with some more and put it over here. It still has to come down to faith, our faith, but also how do I apply this to my life? And we'll talk about that. That'll be the last part of it. We'll look on how does my story fit into the meta-narrative. What is meta-narrative again?
The big picture, big story.
So it's God's story. And all of our little parts, in fact, in our lives, we need to just stop and say, why is this thing happening in my life? How can I take this and fit it into the big picture that God is creating for my life? Because my life, and for those of us who are at the retreat, the picture I gave you was the tapestry there and the threads that went through the tapestry. And our part, we were part of the thread that was mankind, but we were just a little teeny part. But we're still part of that. And we can't just pretend we're out there doing our own thing. If there's a tapestry, the tapestry has a form and a function that's being set. And I can't just decide what my part is going to be. It's there. And if I want to live a life that is a life of being free, I find out what he has. What does God want out of this life? And within that, you'll be more free than any time that you rebel and say, I'm going to do it my way, and I'm going to do whatever I darn well please. You're in bondage when you do that. And every one of us have done it, even as Christians. So
the earthquakes over there.
Well, let me ask you. I'll tell you, but before I tell you, I will let you tell me. Years ago, when I was a new Christian and I was going to school at Biola, they would have missionaries come in. And this is the first time I ever got this picture. There was a gentleman who was actually Japanese and had been interned during World War II, and he was a Christian. And he was just telling us how God had used that time. He met his wife there. He went through this whole story. But then his point of his story was, he said he felt that God brought communism to China. Now, any of us who are anti-communists, especially growing up, were really anti-communist. That was like, what? And he kind of just paused and waited for us to get through all of our bigotry. And then he told us this story. And he was a very godly, gentle-spirited man. And he said that his father had been part of mission to China. And they could get nowhere in China because in China, they had over 200 languages. So you couldn't just go in and speak a language. They had no roads to the highlands at all. They were very difficult to get to some of the highest ones. And if you read old missionary books about missionaries going into China, they maybe walked for a week before they could get to a people. And just figure carrying in supplies. This does not happen easily. So there was language barriers. There was road barriers. There was ancestor worship barriers. And there was one other, and I can't, maybe I'll remember it as I talk. But he said those were humongous barriers to try and bring the gospel in. And when communism came in, it eliminated all but one language. It built roads to all the high places. And it eliminated ancestor worship. And he said the gospel flourished in the middle of communism. Now, if somebody doesn't tell me that story, I'm thinking communism is evil. And it wasn't that communism is godly. It's that God used that communism in the middle of a peoples to accomplish his goal. Okay. So let's take Nepal. Nepal is one of the most closed countries in the world. There are missionaries there, but they're not under the title of missionary. They're under all sorts of titles, like EFL teacher. There are Christians who are Nepalese, Nepalese, I don't know what you'd call them, whoever they are, the people, who do have outreach to orphanages, but Hinduism there is a very violent form. And Christians are not allowed in that country on purpose. So, earthquake comes. What immediately happens?
People come in to help.
From all over the world. And who are the ones who are primary right there in the front of the whole thing coming to help? Christian organizations. So, can God handle that? And could it even have been from his hand to set these people free? We just have to see with different eyes. We have to take our eyes off the narrative as we are looking at it, as we're defining it, as what fits our world's view, and start trying to see from God's world view. And let him challenge us, because we don't grow in how big God is until we begin to start seeing that. And that's I remember the earthquake down in California. There's multiple, and I was in several of them, but there was an earthquake in the North Valley. Let's see, it's not North. Well, it might have been the Northridge Valley. There was several there, but I think it was Northridge. And I'm going, and I did this. Okay, God. So, like, why there? Why not other places? I found out it was the pornographic capital of the whole world, right there. Huge amounts of pornography being shipped all over the world. Child pornography, premier. It's like, okay, I got it. It doesn't mean it's not going to move. Doesn't mean that's not going to keep going, but God judged them. And if anybody's in the middle of that, if they paid attention, they get out of that and look for the God who caused that earthquake. It's bigger than we think.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is we tend to look at these things from our point of view of, but they're all the people that died.
Right.
Well, they're still part of that bigger narrative. What happened in the seconds before they died?
Did God not know with those who would are his and those who are not his?
And how many miracles are coming out of that we'll never hear of course, because we have liberal media news.
Right.
But how many miracles of people drawing close to God and coming to God through all of that. You know, that fits in with the bigger picture, just the limit of earth.
So this is where faith gets stretched. Yeah. My faith can't fit into my narrative. My narrative has to fit into the bigger one. And I have to begin to see with different eyes. This is one of the things that's kept one of my sons away from the Lord, is he keeps saying, well, what about the people up in Africa who've never heard the gospel? I know there are verses, and I've known situation after situation from missionaries, when there is one person in a tribe sitting up in the middle of God-forsaken country seeking the God of heaven, whoever he is and whatever his name is, he'll get a missionary there. I told you this story, and I've told you this, and I'll tell you it again. One of my teachers, who was a missionary to Africa, went to a missionary meeting somewhere in Asia. I don't even really know where. I didn't remember those details. But he was there, and one of the missionaries that talked was the first Tibetan Christian. And he had been an idol maker. And he made idols. And one day he's looking at the idols he made and he's saying, I am making these idols for people to worship. And then he kind of went, does that make me God? And then he started looking at his thumbs and he started thinking, whoever made that is greater than any of this. So he started praying to the God of his thumb. He had no name for him because he didn't know who he was. But he prayed to the God of his thumb. And the next time his wood came in from wherever it came in from, the Gospel of John was wrapped in that wood, and he accepted the Lord and was the first Christian anywhere in that whole area. And he became a pastor. I don't know how. He became a pastor. He became a legislator, changed laws. there was another thing. So he was political, he was, and a doctor. He went and got a degree to be a doctor, to help the people in his area. And I've heard that time after time in areas that are the first time there is a missionary come in. So we don't know, unless this is why it's important to read missionary stories, because you read missionary stories and you begin to see God in a world that doesn't have anything to do with your parameters. Yeah, go ahead. You're smiling.
And just within our story, Jericho's about to get destroyed.
Yeah.
The walls are going to fall. The people are going to get destroyed. The Israelites are going to kill everybody. What has happened? Rahab, this one girl there, has been waiting for this. And God's going to save her.
And her family gets under that umbrella, don't they? And that goes back to the Philippian jailer. That picture of the Philippian jailer, same thing. You know, the umbrella of one person. And she didn't know God. Because even as we look at her, so let's look at her. We start to see.
Wasn't that a condition that she gave for her faith, saving the people?
That became her process.
To save her family?
Yeah, well, it was. Exactly.
But she was learning about God. Yes, and I know God.
Well, she was afraid of him first.
And then
she believed the story.
She believed the story was powerful. But how many times does faith come out of fear? Think of that earthquake again. Mm-hmm. If I'm in the middle of an earthquake, I'm terrified. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So where are you going to look for your solutions? And that becomes who the rest of your narrative is about. Okay, so let's start. Joshua, son of Nun sent two men as spies. Do we know who these two guys are?
No.
We just know they're two men. That's all we know. Secretly from Shittim saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. So they went and came to the house of a harlot whose name was Rahab. Why did they pick the harlot?
I was thinking that was sort of like the local inn.
Yes.
It was open to everybody.
And if you're going to go look for the local gossip, where do you know you can get it?
Go in our house that's on the city wall.
There are walls,
yeah,
right there.
On, you're right.
And a lot of strangers are coming through there, and they wouldn't stick out like a sore thumb.
Right. Very good. Well, at least shouldn't, but somehow they did a little bit because the king went look. The king himself came looking for him.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that they knew to go to her. Right. And she's on that wall. She might have been paid also to inform the people who came in.
That sounds like a kitty cat.
Because the king sent someone to talk to her right away and say, okay, send these guys. And I thought, well, you know,
yeah, we're
that
really
was
left with speculation.
Extra money or something. You know, by being a prostitute.
Well, and that was before she had the scarlet cord hanging out.
Right.
Maybe she had it hanging out the other way, so that's how people knew.
We don't know. And it could be simply that God said, that's where you're going.
Yes.
We're not told that part of the story. And if we're not told a part of the story, we've always said this before, you're welcome to speculate, just don't make your theology based on it. Because we don't know it. And our theology has to be based on what we know to be true. So, like even when I'm talking to you about Nepal, it's speculation, but it's speculation based on history. I've consistently seen God do this throughout history, so that would be my speculation. But I can't say God did this because there's Joe Blow and Samuel, whatever, that needed to be saved, and so he had this whole earthquake, killed 10,000 people, so those two could be saved. Would he do that? Yeah, he would. My ways are not his ways, my thoughts are not his thoughts. And my God is in his heavens, and he does whatever he pleases.
Well, not whatever.
But that's his whatever.
Yeah.
It's not my whatever.
Yeah.
He does whatever he does. That statement is, I don't need to come to you and ask if it's okay, Kit.
Right.
Because I'm going,
so where were you?
Yoo-hoo! Did you ask me on that one? I have a better way to do it. My God is in his heaven, and he does whatever he pleases. And yes, it's all, and that's why we do character studies. Because even as we study the theology all the way through the Bible, what we're building on every single book, every single verse we look at, is an understanding of who God is. And he's faithful to that understanding, and he never changes.
Why? Because he's perfect. We change because
we're not.
There you go. Okay. So the king of Jericho sent word, it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men from the sons of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land." And the king of Jericho sent word to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you and have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land." So he even knew why they were there. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them, and she said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they come from, where they were from." Is that true?
No.
She lied.
She lied, right. Mm-hmm. Could she have been a believer and lied?
Yes,
because what does she not yet have?
Faith.
Keep going.
She doesn't have any of
this.
She doesn't have any
grief.
In what? She knows the law.
She doesn't know him, does she? What does she know about God so far?
He
dried up the Red Sea and annihilated all the Pharaoh's people. Yeah. That's a scary thing. Yeah. She knows a scary, I know about
the two kings. She knows that.
And the two kings, the Amorites, yes.
Well, she said he was the God in heaven and earth below.
Mm-hmm. So she knew he was big. Mm-hmm. But how many of the gods in the... just think of Allah. Is Allah a very nice god? Or how about the Hindu gods? You have some really wild, overly sexed gods in that part of the world. I mean, they're crazy. So, what does she know about God? She can only know about God what she learns. So, her process for the rest of her life is going to be what?
Learning
what is true. Did any of you come to the Lord with false beliefs?
Of course.
I didn't understand. Like I said, my son and that whole thing with the natives up in the mountain, he has a false belief, understanding of God. And I can tell him and teach him and show him, and it's got to be his faith. Even if he doesn't... Is there a point where you read the Bible and you don't understand what you're reading?
Of course.
But you know what you're supposed to believe? So what do you do then?
Study.
And then what if you study?
You do what you know to be right.
Pardon?
Yes, for God to help you, but you do what you know to be right.
You have to accept it by faith.
Right.
That's what faith is, guys. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things unseen. I may not understand it, but what I can understand about God is he is right.
She knew it was right to hide the spies.
She knew they needed to be protected.
So, like Cory Kinder, she was, you know, you weren't at the
piece. No, but I read her book.
Story about how, you know, she was rehearsing over and over again what to say when they came in. No, they're not here. Well, they were there. That was the lie. But she did that because she knew she was supposed to hide.
But her sister didn't. Her sister told the truth. And her sister's son was still saved. So who was right? We're all in process, guys.
Yeah.
We're letting God stretch our faith. And so don't be harsh on yourself for something you did 20 years ago because you were weak. Just confess it. Or even last week. Or today. Confess it. Go on. Let him consecrate you. That's one of our words today. Okay. So the woman had taken the two men, hidden them, and said, "Yes, the men came to me, did not know where they were from. It came about when it was time to shut the gates at dark that the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them." As you did your cross references on these, what did you learn about her in Hebrews 11:30 and James 2:25?
She didn't die with the others when they refused to obey God.
She's in the role of heroes of the faith.
She is?
Yeah.
Why?
Hebrews 11, because she's a great-great-great-great-great-grandmother of a born Jesus.
Four greats. three greats. Four generations.
Yeah.
I know, I counted, I was going five. Pardon?
She welcomed the spies in peace. Yes.
So she was willing. What could she have lost? Had they been found?
Everything.
She could have lost everything. So on that level, as far as she understood, she had faith that she was willing to let it cost her everything. How often do we do that?
And from Hebrews we read that she was still called the harlot.
Yeah, it makes me kind of sad. But I think that was to remind us where from whence she came, because where she went was past that. And the fact, to me, the fact that she was in the line of Jesus screams something to all the people we look at and go, well, they're this. I mean, if God couldn't save that person, they're so bad. And he goes, and there's a harlot who is the great-grandmother of Jesus. Oh, no, wait a minute.
Well, it's like Esther.
Great-great-grandmother.
You know, we think of Queen Esther. She had no choice in being given to the king.
Yep.
And a lot of these young girls, they had no choice. If the king wanted them,
that's true.
They took had the power.
If a man wanted them, they took him.
That's true.
Because they
so
didn't.
She,
they,
maybe as a child, she was even taken. Who knows?
Well, we know she was at least for a year in the preparation of becoming a concubine, possibly wife, but she didn't make it to wife. She was going to be a concubine.
Yeah, Esther.
Esther. So we have all these different stories. And Ruth, have you ever thought about the story of, we'll get there, but have you thought about the story of Ruth? She laid herself at his feet. For what purpose? Guys, don't be naive on this one. Okay, so... verse 7. So the men pursued them on the road to the Jordan, to the fords. I almost want to say fjords. They were deep, but that's not what I said. The fords. As soon as those who were pursuing them had gone up, they shut the gate. Now, before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof. Now we're going to hear what she knows, okay? So you tell me when we're done what she knows. And said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites, who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And when we heard it, our hearts melted, and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. You guys have said these things. Now, therefore, please swear to me by the Lord, and that means everything I just said, she said, since I have dealt kindly with you, so that you will deal kindly with my father's household, and give me a pledge of truth, and spare my father. Okay, so this is what she's asking. Tell me what she knows about God.
He can spare people.
That he can what?
Spare them.
He can spare them.
And he's given them the land.
He's given them the land. How did we know this?
She said it.
Okay, so he's given them the land. It belongs to them. She knows that land she's on doesn't belong to her. And she's believing that.
And she also seemed to know what truth was. Even though she lied to protect them, at this point it says she wanted from them a pledge of truth.
So you're learning truth. You may not understand truthfulness in the middle of truth. What would her truth have been in this story so far?
She knew.
There is a God.
Yeah, right. She knew what God could do.
She knew what he could do.
Her people were in terror.
Her people were terrified.
She knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. Well, she knew what God had done before.
How did she know what was going to happen?
Because she knew what God had happened before.
She knew what he's already done, and he's told them that this land is theirs.
Mm-hmm. And so she knows
something's got to happen.
She knows her people aren't just going to walk away, probably.
Probably not.
In the story.
She right.
She knew that God could save them.
She knew that God could save her.
Well, and I especially like, too, that she does kindness for them. She lies. She does all this stuff. And then she extracts the promise. So she doesn't do it up front whenever they come to her door. It doesn't say, okay,
I know you are.
A, B, C, and D. She helps them first. She does all of this stuff. And then she says, now, since I've dealt kindly with you.
And why do you think she did that? I mean, what is that?
She planned.
Well, she wanted to prove who she was to them.
Okay, so can we glean something from that?
As far as our personal character.
Yeah. We're not talking about lying here. Can we glean something from that?
Yeah, that as far as she had stepped out in what she believed to be true, she stepped out with what she knew to be true. And then she asked afterwards.
Is there anything that can be, can you be wholly manipulative? And that's H-O-L-Y. Not lying, guys. I'm not talking about lying here.
We need to act in faith no matter what we think we're going to get out of it.
Sometimes to be heard, we have to go around the side door. We can't go straight through. Just watch sometimes. Think about the woman who came to Jesus and asked for crumbs from... She said even the dogs get crumbs from the table. And she knew that she probably was a little bit better than a dog, but maybe not a whole lot to him. She didn't know. And that's how he responded. Did she change his mind?
No. He gave her the hint. He said, I can't give to the children or to the dogs what belongs to the children. She gave her the hint to even think about a dog.
Which meant he elevated her ability to even think on that. He does the same thing to us all the time, guys. And when we pray for wisdom, this is the kind of thing that may come about. She doesn't know how these two spies are going to respond. She may know about the God of their God, but she doesn't know them. And she serves them. They're paying attention to her. You know, it's a lot easier to have somebody listen to you if you get their eyes. But if you just keep talking kind of like this, you're not really necessarily...
Listening eyes! Listen!
She proved her intention to them by doing what she did.
She did.
So
she did.
They were willing.
And what was her ulterior motive?
To save her family.
To save her family.
Yeah.
To save her family. So. And is that evil?
No.
To me, she's looking to help others. Not so much herself, but for others and her family.
She may be a harlot, but she has a heart of service, doesn't
yeah.
she? I mean, just the fact that she's a harlot and that she cares about her family doesn't fit our picture of a harlot.
No.
Most of it, I mean, if you do any psychology study on being a harlot, these girls have been abused and used and trashed and incest and all sorts of other things. They end out in the street because of those things. Most of them are not going to go back and save their parents, so this is something that's different.
Yeah.
We don't know what her whole story is, and guess what? We don't evidently need to know what her whole story is, because God doesn't tell us. Okay, so then we've got the part of what she knows about him, about God, and then she goes, please swear to me by him, by the Lord, this one who is the God of heaven and the earth beneath. Since I have dealt kindly with you, that you also deal kindly in my father's household, give me a pledge of truth. That's what you were saying. Spare my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. So the men said to her, well, so what did she just say there? She knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Death is coming. So the men said to her, our life for yours, if you do not tell this business of ours. And it shall come about when... the Lord gives us the land that we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. So this is a long-term promise, isn't it? She doesn't know how long it's going to take. It could be for a long time. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the wall, so that she was living on the wall. And she said to them, go to the hill country, so the pursuers will not happen upon you and hide yourselves. Because where are they going to look? Straightest roads possible, aren't they? Hide yourself there for 3 days until the pursuers return. Then afterwards you may go on your way. And the men said to her, we shall be free from this oath to you, which was... What is an oath like?
Promise.
It's like a covenant, isn't it? When we study covenant, there are the covenants that are between God and man, and that's a very different covenant than just swearing like an oath, which is still considered a covenant between two people. And what did they have between them that held this covenant together, or this oath?
Her decision to not tell about them.
And their promise to her. Okay, so there is a two-way deal there. It's still based on both parts. If she does tell where they are, then the oath is done. If they, of course, she's at their mercy, but if they don't carry it through, the oath is done too. So it all depended on their character.
Well, and then they give her, in verse 18, they're giving her a little more to do on her side.
Okay.
That's going to bind their side also.
Which is what?
this, unless when we come into the land, back in verse 17, we shall be free from this oath to you, which you have made us swear, unless when we come into the land, you tie this cord of scarlet thread in the window through which you let us down, and gather to yourself into the house your father and your mother and your brothers and all your father's household.
So they have to be where?
In the house.
There's no way that they could know who her brothers and sisters and father and so and so are if they're not contained. I mean, they don't have little bands around their arm. Their people would shoot them.
It kind of reminds me of Passover.
I was going to say the same thing.
It's like a similar thing to red cord with blood over the doorpost, and they had to be in the house and stay in the house. The death angel coming again.
So what did we just learn about God, the way he teaches here?
Sometimes repeat pictures.
Pardon?
Sometimes you get a repetition.
Pardon?
He's immutable. Mm-hmm. He doesn't change.
He doesn't change, and he uses pictures.
Try to help us see the point.
He gives us pictures after pictures after pictures. And yea, though, maybe you learn by one way. There are those who learn by pictures, and particularly male peoples learn by visual pictures. So they're getting, and they're pretty visual, aren't they? So, it shall come about that anyone who goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head. Because we've told you what the parameters are, basically. And we shall be free, but anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if a hand is laid on him. These are pretty very black and white, aren't they?
But it's a faith thing for her family, because they could try to go out and fight for themselves. They have to believe her story and the spy.
Well, then they could just come in and slaughter them, because they're all contained in one place.
Yeah, they have to trust that they're going to do... And her family all has to trust that these men are going to keep their covenant with her.
Mm-hmm. And what is the covenant based on?
The promise, the conditions.
Which is the Lord your God. Mm-hmm. The one by heaven and earth, by heaven above and earth beneath. That's who this covenant, this oath, is based on. So now she'll find out if these people are faithful.
I think that shows something about Rahab. Mm-hmm. That her family respect her. In spite of her profession, that they trust her truth. Now, she lies to the king, but there's something about Rahab that the family honors, mm-hmm. and that they will obey her and stay put
even
in the house.
One of the things we haven't done is studied this culture. I mean, to do a real study would be to study the culture, but she could be one of the temple prostitutes, one of the, and has a high position. We don't know that. I mean, we think of prostitutes as all contained in one little place, and they're bad people with a red light district.
Well, I did read something in the culture, and it did say that they didn't consider prostitutes as negatively as we do. And if you think about, like, World War... during certain wars, and there were spies, women spies, and in order to get information, they slept with those who came in and then reported, and that's why I had said that. Other thing, she had a house,
mm-hmm.
that...
Two-story house, at least.
Yeah, you know, maybe somebody who wasn't paid for the task, I mean, she may have been thought well of, but that's why they went to
her. Would a culture consider a prostitute in a good light versus why the Jews would not?
Well, because they're not dealing
with
our God. No, they don't have moral.
They don't have
laws. They don't have morality.
They don't have
God. Yeah,
laws.
They're pagans. There you go.
They have, this is a good deed you do for us because you're giving us information, and so we think highly of you.
And really, I mean, what's to say prostitution is wrong if you don't have a God who says it's wrong?
Right.
Or a holy God? I mean, we're going to get a part where we talk about consecration, but think about it. What determines what's right and wrong in a culture?
Yeah.
The more you throw God out of a culture, it's pretty much what is right in my eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if I don't like what you're doing, I can figure out a way to hurt you as long as I can do it edge around the law. And you know you can do bad things within the law.
Yeah, just because it's legal doesn't make it right.
Mm-hmm.
We tell that to the kids all the time.
But why?
Because it's legal.
But why? Because there is a God who has a moral, a morality. And so it's his morality. It doesn't matter what the culture says. It matters in the sense of me being faithful to my culture, but my higher faithfulness is to God. So even though my culture says I can smoke marijuana, and it's allowed, am I going to have you all over for a marijuana party?
Why not?
Why not?
Because we won't come. You'll be by yourself.
That's right. Maybe. Because there's a verse that says, do not get drunk with wine or anything, for that is dissipation, but rather be filled with the Spirit. So what does God want me to be filled with?
Not marijuana.
He wants me to be filled with the Spirit.
So that's why they're calling alcohol the Spirit.
All playing the game. It's all playing the game. The question becomes for all of this is, what is controlling you? What is controlling you? You know, your anger can control you. Your bitterness can control you. Your love of chocolate can control you.
Oh, no.
I didn't say you couldn't love chocolate. I said you can't let it control you. And I love chocolate. And I really work hard on not letting it control me. What did you say? I missed it.
I said, doesn't anything you do in excess wrong?
But that's the point, isn't it? It's what is controlling you. What is controlling you? So we have to think about that. What does control us? And these are the things we can see through there. Okay, so verse 19, it came about that anyone who goes out of the doors, we saw that, so 20, but if you tell this business of ours, then we are free from the oath which we have made, you have made us swear. So there are stipulations, as there are even in marriage. What is the stipulation in the covenant of marriage? Faithfulness, isn't it?
Well, it depends on what the marriage vows were, because the laws of the land are changing.
Right. And I'm talking about this point as a Christian. I'm not even talking about if you've had three marriages before you came to the Lord. I ain't talking about that, guys. We're not here to beat the living daylights out of you. I'm talking about today to now, the rest of your life. What is God calling you to? He's calling you to faithfulness, to Him.
He's calling you to be one with Him.
Yes. And if there are things that keep me from that, I need to deal with it, even if I don't want to deal with it. In fact, I usually don't want to deal with it, right? Okay. So according to your word, so be it. So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord to the window, because she didn't know when they were coming. They departed and came to the hill country and remained there for 3 days until the pursuers returned, and now the pursuer had sought them all along the road but had not found them. Then the two men returned and came down from the hill country and crossed over. See, they didn't have any big problem with crossing over. They didn't need the Lord to make a big heap. They just crossed over. And they came to Joshua, the son of Nun, and they related to him all that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, surely the Lord has given all of the land into our hands. Moreover, all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before us. Very important.
They're dead.
No,
they're fearful. Remember our verses, be strong and courageous? They're not. They're the opposite of that. See, God is saying, when you see what I do, let it give you strength. Let it straighten you. But if you're not his child and you see what he does, it makes you overwhelmed. That's the picture. So if I'm in a situation where I'm being overwhelmed by what God does, what do I need to do?
Fix my eyes on Jesus.
And I need to realize that that's what I've done. I've let this situation become bigger than him. And it's not like when I say to you guys, confess, I'm not saying, oh, yeah, you're bad people. We're going to confess our whole lives, because this is part of it. I'm a weak person in this, Lord. Help me be strong. Help me keep my eyes on you. Help this thing not be as important to me as it has been. Help clean it out of me. I don't know how to do it. I try. I've told this story before, too. You'll hear all my stories a million times. But when my mom came to the Lord, she had tried to quit smoking for 40 years. 40 years. Tried everything under the sun. I remember the little tube with the fake stuff and the silk. I mean, we went through everything. And she came to the Lord, never smoked again. That's when I knew she was a Christian. Because she didn't have the power to. Now, God doesn't do that to everybody. Some of us have had to work on it stopping for a lot longer. But that was God's way of speaking to her. This is real. I am real. I'm in your life. And she said, I never was even tempted again. I'm like, really? Wow. She did that with chocolate.
You don't look at chocolate as an addiction. It's food.
Have you noticed anybody in this room slightly overweight? There's a difference between a piece of chocolate versus a pound of chocolate.
A pound? That's all you stop at.
No, I don't buy chocolate for a good reason. I know my addiction.
I love my chocolate.
Sugar free, so don't worry.
Oh, sugar free gives you the run, so how much of that? TMI. You stay home, huh? Okay, let's see. All right. So, tell me what you learned about Rahab when you looked up the cross references. We did do some of it. Well, you did all of it. So if you were doing, and I'm not doing it this week, but I did it last week, I wrote a list about what we learned about Rahab. And when we write a list about what we learned about Rahab, what is that called?
Character study.
It's a character study. So when your lesson asks you to stop and list everything you know about a person, you're doing a character study. If it's about a word, you're doing a topic. You know, if I see, and you got this when we did, well, you'll get it 100 more times, but if you have a lesson where I say, go in and ask your who, what, where, when, why, and how questions, and start looking for words that we are calling keywords, which are repetitive words, and may only be repeated, by the way, in one chapter. Where do we see Rahab? Just one chapter. I mean, there's a couple of other places, but pretty much it's all in that chapter. So she is a keyword to that chapter, but she's not a keyword to the next chapter. So we have keywords that are key to a chapter or key to the whole book. Be strong and courageous, we see, is fairly important, but we still saw that in chapter 1, mostly. I think we see it again in 9 or something like that. I think it's in 9 or 10. It's okay. But what I'm saying, it's a key word to 1, because what is he trying to do with Joshua?
Strengthen him.
He's strengthening him. He's going to give him...
leadership.
He's consecrating him. He's sending him out. We're going to even see that in our verses as we continue on. So you have your who, what, where, when, why, and how questions. You start to see words that are important that come up. And part of the inductive study is to mark those words. For those of you who've never marked them before, you can see on the back of your books ways to mark them. It doesn't matter how you mark them. And nobody's going to look at it. If you do it all in pencil, that's fine. But the point of marking is then you next thing you do is list them. Why am I listing them? Why do I list a word that I've marked?
Give you a bigger picture of what's going on.
It helps contain it for me, doesn't it? I mean,
and
if
do your topical studies and your character studies.
So you understand
more. And we do. When you go back and list them, all of a sudden something will come out I didn't even really notice in my reading. So it's just a tool, guys. It's a tool to help you get into the text. It's a tool. So then, all right, let's look at Joshua 3. What did you title Joshua 2, by the way? For those of you who titled it.
Rahab,
fighting
Joshua.
Yeah. Could be simple as Rahab and the spies. You know, I mean, it'd be as simple as that. Why are we titling things?
So
For us to remember.
For us to remember. It's like we're doing a table of contents for the book of Joshua.
And, we can go back
and it can help me remember what's in that book. Because I'm starting to see the sequence of events. What was chapter 1 about?
Joshua's charge.
It was Joshua. Second one is Rahab and the spies. You're beginning to see this sequence coming about, aren't you? Because we're watching history. Okay, so then we get to Joshua 3. Then Joshua rose early in the morning. He and the sons of Israel set out from Shittim to come to Jordan. And they lodged there before they crossed. Okay, so they're lodged. At the end of 3 days, the officers went through the midst of the camp. And they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God with a Levitical priest carrying it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. So what is the picture he's got here? What are they going to be looking for?
The Ark.
The presence of God.
They're looking for the Ark, the presence of God, and who's
priest.
With the Ark?
The priest.
So he's giving them status with the Ark, of the Covenant, for this people and this situation. And then verse 4, I think, is interesting. However, there shall be between you and it a distance of about 2,000 cubits, which, by the way, is about a half a mile, by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you shall go, for you have not passed this way before. What is that all about?
Well, for one thing, the people are not to go near the Ark of the Covenant.
Well, yeah, but we don't know that at this point.
True.
But you're right. What can you tell here? Let's do it this way. I'm sitting here. Can you all see me?
Yeah.
Why?
You're sitting there.
And what is there between us?
Proximity is close.
There's space. So I sort of stand out for that reason. If we were all in this little itty-bitty squished ball, and you were supposed to be following me, would I stand out? Would you be able
yeah.
to do that?
Yeah.
Okay, so just visualize 2.5 million people plus sitting there. If they're right in front of them, people back there are not going to see anything. Mm-hmm. But if they're out a half a mile, they're watching them,
yeah.
right? So this is why I think that they're doing it. And then Joshua said to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders. That is a very important statement. So Joshua is speaking to the people here. And what does he say to the people?
Get ready to consecrate.
What is consecrate?
In this case, a purification.
Prepare your hearts. Prepare.
Well, actually here it's not circumcision. Because that comes after they go over.
Oh, that's right.
So what is consecrate?
And they have to make sacrifices or something?
Wash themselves.
No, nope, this is a very personal thing.
Mentally prepare yourself.
What is consecrate?
Think
historically. Set aside, set apart, sanctify, make holy.
Clean up.
Clean up your act.
And when we think of like the Day of Atonement, those guys have to consecrate themselves. So they're being set apart for a purpose. For a purpose. And my personal responsibility is to be holy for everything. For why? Because tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Does he tell them what that is?
No. Yeah.
But he's preparing them to do what? To focus. So he's got focus on what? They're here, these 2.5 million plus people, and they are looking out there a half a mile away. To the ark, to the priests. They are to be consecrating themselves here because what?
Because the Lord's going to do wonders.
Because the Lord's going to do wonders. Mm-hmm. So, are you thinking about the TV show you're going
to
watch that night? Are you thinking about going out and gardening and kind of missing it maybe because you'd rather be out gardening? You are focused. And he has called you to a responsibility.
Pardon? I mean, it's a lot of shows when I'm out gardening.
Well, the point is, you have to decide which ones are most important, gardening shows or God. Cuts to the quick, doesn't it?
It's Papa Murphy. They always contact me on Tuesday Bible study.
Papa Murphy? The pizza place?
Oh. Yeah, they always send it when I'm here in Bible study.
Order us a pizza.
Oh, funny.
It's a sign.
The problem is you got to go home and cook it. Okay, sit. So who did Joshua just speak to?
The people.
And what did he say? Why? So who's he talking to in verse 6? He's talking to the priests. And what does he tell them to do?
Take up the ark.
Cross over ahead of the people. So what did they do?
They went ahead of the people.
They took up the ark and went ahead of the people. Because what has Israel not done so far? They've not done a good job at obeying. And who are the people that get to go over? Those are the ones who are the children of the ones who didn't obey. And we can tell that by what's going to happen in this chapter. Now the Lord said to Joshua, this day I will begin to exalt you. Okay, so now who is being talked to? We've had Joshua talk to the people and Joshua talk to the priests. Now the Lord is talking to Joshua. And what does he say there?
He would exalt him.
He's going to confirm Joshua as leader.
That's basically what he's doing. Why? I mean, just as what?
And so this Israel is, will know that God is with Moses.
Okay, and you said earlier we talked about Moses. This is where we talk about Moses. So he's relating what I did with Moses, Joshua, I am now going to do with you. And before the people, they knew who Moses was. Now he's showing the people we're transitioning. In fact, we're transitioning quite a bit, we're going to see. So we're transitioning leadership. I will be with you. You shall moreover command the priests who carry. So he's now giving him in charge of the people, and he's giving them in charge of the priests who will carry the covenant, saying, when you come to the edge of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. And the stuff I read said that probably took about 2 hours for the water to heap up and dry out. So they're standing there in the season that easily floods. So there's a little bit of faith there, too.
Well, and they're carrying it out when the water hasn't gone back yet.
No, they're just waiting there on the edge with their feet all wet, probably getting all mucky and everything else.
Well, hang on. They haven't actually done it. This is the Lord just giving instructions.
Right. So but that's what he's on the edge of the waters of the Jordan.
How long do you think it took for, time-wise, from the first time when they step out in the waters to the time everybody crosses, did the priest stand out there? With the
I don't think we know that.
Half a mile back.
Yeah. You have to, we have to, yeah, exactly. They the people don't follow until they're a half a mile in, but they stop, don't they? In the middle of the water, and then everybody goes through. Well, let's keep reading.
Okay.
And Joshua said to the sons of Israel, so now who's he speaking to?
People.
So he's talked to the priests. Or Lord talked to Joshua. He tells the priest what he's going to do. And then Joshua says to the sons of Israel, come here and hear the words of the Lord your God. So he's calling them to listen. And this is what Joshua says. And so he is, in that sense, he's translating for God just like Moses did. He got the message, he passed on. He got the message, he passed on. Joshua said to the sons of Israel, okay, 10. Joshua said, by this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will assuredly dispose them before you, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Jebusites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is crossing over ahead of you into the Jordan. Now, take for yourselves 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one for each tribe. And we're looking at this and we're saying, why? It shall come about when the soles of the feet of the priests who carry the ark of the Lord, the Lord of all the earth, rest in the waters of the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan will be cut off. And the waters which are flowing down from above will stand in one heap. 20-mile heap. So when the people set out from their tents to cross the Jordan with the priests, carrying the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and when those who carried the Ark came to the Jordan, and the feet of the priests carried the Ark were dipped in the edge of the water, for the Jordan overflows all its banks in the days of harvest. That would be a spring wheat, by the way. The waters which were flowing down from above, or winter wheat,
which were flowing from above, stood up in one heap a great distance away at Adam, the city that is beside Zarethan, and those which were flowing down towards the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, which, by the way, we call the Dead Sea, were completely cut off. So the people crossed opposite Jericho. And the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on the dry ground in the middle of the Jordan, while all Israel crossed on dry ground until all the nation had finished crossing the Jordan. Why do you think God had them do that?
The priests, you mean?
Yeah, why did he have the priests stand in the middle?
Because as soon as they came out of the water, out of the Jordan, the water started flowing again.
So
representative of the presence of God. Yeah. So as long as the presence of God was there in the middle of the water,
they were safe.
So it went before them, and then it stayed in their midst.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a good lesson for us.
What else would this remind them of?
Of Moses.
Of Moses and the Red Sea.
And God says, this day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel.
So he's doing this, even this, as a picture of Joshua taking over the role that Moses has had. And he shows that he does the same thing. He can do the same thing through Joshua that he did through Moses. Because it's not about Joshua and it's not about Moses. What is it about?
God.
The presence of God. He's teaching them about his presence.
Well, and everybody who's going through it, other than Joshua and Caleb, they're all those adults that were alive at that time, they're all gone. So
they were just stories.
Yeah, they were just stories that they'd heard.
And stories from people who weren't faithful to God
either.
How do we know this?
They all died.
They all died. What else in our story lets us know this?
Oh, they didn't even circumcise them.
Because Abraham was told 8 days after the birth they were to be circumcised, and anybody who wasn't circumcised was to be cut off.
Yep.
And they didn't circumcise this whole generation of young men.
Yep.
Is that a faithless people or what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Holy Toledo. Anyway, okay, so anything else you want to add from chapter 3?
Okay, wait. The heap is 20 miles away.
That's no, it's
you
there.
It's 20 miles.
It's 20 miles long, probably.
What?
It heaped up. It's sort of like it lifted up back to Adam.
Who's 20 miles away, right?
Yeah. Right. Back to Adam. So it would. How far it would be is how far is Adam from the beginning or the end of the Jordan. So I don't know what those miles would be. Right?
I guess. It basically, it says, rose up in one heap a great distance away.
Yeah.
You can only tell what it says. Adam, the city is beside Zarethan, and those which were flowing down towards the Sea of Arabah.
Well, the word is away instead of high.
Right.
Yeah. So away is a length.
It's like putting a dam on a river,
yeah.
And the water's coming down, and it fills up, and it just builds up and starts backing up.
It fills up behind
it. As it fills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see pictures like of the Columbia River before it was dammed,
yeah.
It was not all that wide.
Also happened only a year ago, and the river backed up. I mean, we all fall victim
right.
to that.
Absolutely.
Devastation.
Yeah.
And immediate.
And back, and in the area of a dam, that they say that the sides, the banks, are 20 feet high or something like that. So it could fill that up.
But it's the...
that would be huge.
Yeah, the... Are you talking... I know what you're saying. Okay. Right.
Oh, and just for Helen, you know that one thing that I talked about, how in 1927
right.
it came in, that the area where they had crossed, I mean, this is much later.
They crossed.
Yeah. Or what they think. It was like 23 hours that they had without water there before it.
Came back? So about a day.
Which, of course, may not be the circumstances at all as to how that happened or anything, but just...
And just even knowing we've been all that, God, for any of you who've ever lived near rivers, which we have scattered them around here, or lakes, we used to have a lake that when you go swimming in, you're going squishy, 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 because the stuff is, you know, silty. It's kind of deep silty. You're not walking on nice, sweet little sand right into the middle of the lake. It's gunky, and you could have dried that lake up. It would still take months for it to go dry. Mm-hmm. So for that to happen is just an amazing thing. They didn't have any wind or anything. I think they had a wind with the
Red Sea,
but they didn't have a wind here or anything. God just dried it up. So Joshua 4. Now when all the nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one from each tribe. Why would he do that?
So you involve everyone.
So so they're all represented, and when they go back into their land, there's always one guy who remembers doing it, you know, because he's the one who picked up that rock. So there's always a memorial even within the memorials, isn't there? Take up for yourselves 12 stones from here in the middle of the Jordan from the place where the priest's feet are standing firm. Carry them over with you and lay them down in a lodging place where you will lodge tonight. Okay, so the first place they take those stones are where?
The lodging place.
On the other side of the river.
Now, when they say they lodge tonight, is that different than when they first came over and lodged in Shittim?
No, that was leaving there. They were actually heading towards Gilgal.
Okay, so that's not the same place.
No, they left Shittim to come to Gilgal. So they wanted to cross the river to... So carry them with you, lay down in the lodging place where you will lay tonight. So Joshua called the 12 men whom he had appointed from the sons of Israel, one from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, cross again to the Ark of the Covenant, to the Ark of the Lord of your God into the middle of Jordan. And each of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of tribes of the sons of Israel. So these guys have to have a whole different set of faith, don't they? Because they got over and they were done. Wouldn't you go, now we have to go back. And these are the leaders. He's picked leaders to do this.
We've got to go back in there.
We've got to go back. And he said, each of you take a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel. Let this be a sign among you, so that when your children ask later, saying, what do these stones mean to you? Then you will say, because the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, when it crossed the Jordan, where the waters of the Jordan were cut off, so these stones shall become a memorial. And what do we do every first of the month in church? We have communion. Why? Do this in remembrance. And what are we remembering?
Resurrection.
We're remembering that fulfilled Passover, aren't we? That the resurrection, exactly. And what it cost and what he did. And we just go through all the aspects, because it would be easy to even forget that. Thus the sons of Israel did as Joshua commanded them, took up the 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, just as the Lord spoke to Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel. They carried them over with them to the lodging place and put them there. Then Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan. So he took a leader from every tribe to get stones out of the middle to take over the lodging. And then Joshua goes back, takes 12, Joshua, who is the leader of the leaders, takes 12 stones. Can you imagine the process?
So the ark is still in there.
Still there.
So I feel sorry for those priests. They've been standing there a long time.
Well, maybe they're laying down taking a nap. Doesn't tell us
well,
that.
Well, there were quite a few of them, so I have a feeling they
and the ark can't touch the ground. The ark can't touch the ground.
There's quite a
chilling.
Few priests. So.
Okay, so the priests who carried the ark were standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything was completed that the Lord had commanded. Do you think the Lord gave extra strength to those guys?
Sure,
they couldn't lie down because they carry it on their shoulders or else they'll die.
They can't touch the ground. Okay, so when the people had commanded the people hurt the people, when The priest would carry the ark, we're standing in the middle, and everything was complete. The Lord commanded Joshua to speak to the people according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. And the people, so he's still passing on what it had been before, and the people hurried. Like that. They probably ran. They hurried and crossed. And when all the people had finished crossing, the ark of the Lord and the priests crossed before the people.
I like that little piece back here that says, and they are there to this day.
Well, of course, they aren't here today, but they were there to a point. The writing. The time of the writing. The sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over in battle array. Now, why did they do that?
They promised to go to war with the other nine and a half.
So even those guys are just going in to inhabit. At this point, these guys are leaving their families behind. They're coming, so they're in battle array. Before the sons of Israel, just as Moses had spoken to them. You think the guys in the neighboring countries are kind of like watching this?
Yeah.
40,000 guys just walked over in battle array. Just as Moses had spoken to them, about 40,000 equipped for war crossed for battle before the Lord, to the desert plains of Jericho. And on that day, God exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, so that they revered him just as they had revered Moses. So the transition is made once they're on the other side of the river, all the days of his life. And now the Lord said to Joshua, command the priests who carry the ark of the testimony that they come up from the Jordan. So Joshua commanded the priests, saying, come up from the Jordan. And it came about when the priests who carried the ark of the covenant of the Lord had come up to the middle, from the middle of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests were lifted to the dry ground, that the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and went over all its banks as before. What did you learn in your cross-reference to Exodus 25 about the ark that you want to add to this, perchance? You've got all the process of what it looked like, right? You don't have to go through all that process, but anything particular that you want to pull out. What did the ark rest on?
The mercy seat.
The mercy seat.
Right. It carries the testimony which God gave, with the mercy seat on top.
So the mercy seat, then the ark is on top of the mercy seat, or the mercy seat is on top of the ark?
And that's where God would meet with Israel, too.
The ark was over the mercy seat.
Okay, and so we have, the mercy seat is like, it's like this. The mercy seat is like this, and then we have the cherubim doing what?
Making the ark.
They're looking at each other, and their wings are covering.
And they're looking down on that. They're looking down on the ark. So you shall put the mercy seat on top of the ark. Now it said the mercy seat is on top of the ark, and the ark you shall put the testimony which I will give you. There I will meet with you, and from above, the mercy seat from between the two cherubim which are upon the ark of the testimony, I will speak to you about all that I will give you in commandment for the sons of Israel. And then we'll go on in chapter 4 to verse 19. Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th of the first month and camped at Gilgal. Anybody look up the word Gilgal? It's a very interesting, there's a very interesting history on Gilgal, which we'll get more of as we go through, but it has a lot of religious history, some good, some really bad. Now the people came up, those 12 stones which they had taken from the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. He said to the sons of Israel, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall inform your children, saying, Israel crossed this Jordan on dry ground. So what is the focus? Is the focus crossing or the dry ground?
Both.
Why? Because they're coming from someplace, going to someplace. And this is what God is, this is the land that God has promised them. Verse 23, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed, just as the Lord your God had done to the Red Sea. So he's making that connotation too. He's pulling that together, which he dried up before us until we had crossed. Why?
according to verse 24.
That all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty.
And?
So that you may fear the Lord your God forever.
So all mankind is called to fear God. If you're on one side of the river, so to speak, you're afraid of him. On the other side, you can give him, be in awe of him and praise and glorify him. And you worship him forever, but there's still the foundation of the fear of God, fear of the Lord your God. Why? Because he is the God of everything, the heavens and the earth and below the earth. Anything you want to add to that? So what is the meta narrative in that statement?
Forever, he's mighty.
And we don't come next to him, do we? We come on our face before him. So as we begin to see our narrative is always under that meta narrative. And I need to ask, okay, God did this. What is my response to be? Obedience, fear, awe, joy, grace. And just to keep learning and growing about who is this one? What do I learn about him? And the more I learn about him, the more I'm called to obey. But all of it, just like with Jesus, when he came, the first thing he did is said, follow me. What did Adam and Eve not do? Follow God. What are we to do? Follow God. The story has not changed.
Yeah, he's giving them such a good example here of what happened in the first place, so that they can see, do you want to do the same thing that your parents did, or do you want to move
very
on?
Good.
I'm giving you this story again. We're crossing. I'm holding back.
Getting the chance again. We're starting over again. Very good. That's excellent. So what is your decision? Obedience or disobedience? So what did you title that chapter? Pardon? Crossing Jordan, that's good.
Okay.
Anybody?
12 stones,
good. Memorial. Again, it doesn't matter what somebody else titled it. You need to do it yourself so that you can remember, and don't do 47 words because you won't remember 47. Try and keep it as, I'm the one who just sort of repeats the whole thing over again. Okay, Kit, that was the whole chapter. That's not the title. Try and get it down the between 4 and 6. But, you know, 9, okay.
Is 12 all right?
No. That's crossing the wrong.
Oh, okay.
Joshua 5. Now, it came about when the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan went to the west, and the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard. And they're hearing. The gossip is, the news is going out. How the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan. What happened?
Melted. They were scared to death, shaking in their boots.
This is kind of a twofold thing. What's just about to happen with Israel?
They're about to be circumcised.
They're just about to be circumcised. What happens when you're circumcised? You're pretty much hurting for at least 3 days. No, but your baby screamed pretty loud. You had a little boy. I woke up from a sound sleep when that nurse touched that baby boy. So you've got God taking care of that even that. He's got them over there. They're in enemy territory, and he's taking care of the enemies.
Yeah. They're too scared.
They're too afraid.
He could have circumcised them before he crossed the river, but he didn't.
Yeah.
Why do you suppose that is?
You just said it, so that they would have to be protected
because
by him.
Because they're in the promised land. Mm-hmm.
This is the promised land. Don't you remember he didn't show the promised land to Abraham until Lot was gone?
Yep.
That he didn't have Sarah become pregnant until all that game playing was gone?
Yep.
He waits until the right time and until we have said yes. Your terms, God. And so now he's about to do some fascinating things. Verse 2, at that time, the Lord said to Joshua, make for yourself flint knives, circumcise the sons of Israel the second time. What does that mean? I mean, he's not doing, can't have a circumcision on the same guy twice.
No.
There we go again. You just pass the river.
It's the second big circumcision. The first was whenever Abraham had done all of his people all in one
right.
day.
Right. So it was, you know, again, a statement. This is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the people came out of Egypt who were males. All the people, the men of war, died in the wilderness along the way after they came out of Egypt. For all the people who came out were circumcised, but all the people who were born in the wilderness along the way as they came out of Egypt had not been circumcised. For the sons of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness. Now here we're going to get a review of their history. And he's doing this for remembrance, same thing. Until all the nations, that is, the men of war who came out of Egypt perished because they did not listen to the voice of the Lord. Kind of important. To whom the Lord had sworn that he would not let them see the land which the Lord had sworn to their fathers to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. Their children, so he has the first generation, their children whom he raised up in their place, Joshua circumcised, for they were uncircumcised, because they had not circumcised them along the way. Why?
They didn't obey.
Joshua and Caleb were the only ones that not hurt him.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
Yeah. The leaders.
And the only ones who knew how to
circumcise.
What to do.
Yeah, that's true.
So Joshua had to do a million.
That took a little bit.
No way. He could have trained a few people.
But he hurt them.
Verse 8. Now, I'm trying to hurry because we have about 8 minutes left. Now, when they finished circumcising all the nation, they remained in their places in camp until they were healed.
Perfect time there, too, which I think is a picture of waiting on the Lord.
Yeah.
You know, because you just don't know when.
No,
it's
somebody
time
could be
to go.
Quickly and somebody yeah. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you." And by the way, that's what Gilgal means. So the name of that place is called the Rolled Away Place. Circle or rolling, Gilgal to this day. And while the sons of Israel camped at Gilgal, they observed the Passover on the evening of the 14th day of the month on the desert plains of Jericho. On the day, notice how many times it's on the day? Mm-hmm. On the day after Passover, on that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. The manna ceased on the day after they had eaten some of the produce of the land, so that the sons of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate some of the yield of the land of Canaan during that year. So what else transitioned here?
Just when they had been good at cooking manna.
I really didn't know anything else until I got used to it.
You know what went through my mind, it just went through my mind. I'm not saying that this is correct. It was like, okay, how did God feel about that? Did they stop depending on the manna? Were they going or anything like that? Or is this
Let's talk about Noah and the ark. When Noah got off the ark, what's the first thing he did?
Made a sacrifice
on the altar, and then what did they do? They ate of the land. How they did that, I haven't figured out with the flood thing, but it's a process of making a transition.
Clams and...
There you go.
You know.
And dead fish on the ground.
Yeah,
right. Yum! As long as it didn't get moldy. So it's a transition. The transition. It's not that they're not trusting God. It's they're transitioning to a different place of trust. See, this is the problem where we get into is, well, God did it this way. The church did it this way 20 years ago. So we're going to do it this way. No.
We've never done it that way.
Yeah, we've never. The point
is, God was unhappy with them, but it did just end.
No,
he
finished the manna. It was done. Because now he had transitioned them to the place he had promised them. Why did he have to give them manna?
Because they didn't have
any food, and they were on the desert.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now they're in the promised land. And so they got to have a full meal deal for the first time in a long time. Okay. So 13. So it came about when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing. Oh, this is kind of an amazing story.
Yeah.
Was standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand, and Joshua, Jesse Joshua,
yeah,
went to him and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" And he said, "No. Rather, I indeed come now as the captain of the hosts of the Lord." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and bowed down and said to him, "What has my Lord to say to his servant?" Mm-hmm. And the captain of the Lord of hosts, and by the way, that word is servant. The host, the Lord's host is Sabah, or Sabaah, and it's used in the picture of several pictures, which we can look at another time, but it's God is the stronghold, but it's also a picture of servants. So this captain was the host, was the servant of the Lord, and the captain of the Lord's servant said to Joshua, "Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you stand is holy." And what did that remind Joshua of? Same thing. And Joshua was there, wasn't he? This land is holy. That mountain was holy. This land is holy. Why? What was in the mountain that is in the land? The presence of God. And with that, we close, and we're right on time. And Joshua
did.
Did
God say the same thing to Moses at the burning bush?
Because it's in God's presence, isn't it? Any questions in our last 2 minutes?
Yes. This was much better than last week.
Yeah. I love it very much. Only reason was I didn't write it all on the board. It was, but see, this is why when you get to a point, guys, where you're kind of overwhelmed with parts of the study, just remember you are going to understand it eventually. And you're going to understand why you're doing it. But the first time you do it, it just seems overpowering. I thought it was a lot of verses myself. Personally, that's why I sent them to you, because then you've got them.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you got them. They were sent to you.
I opened something, but it's just a little page that you.
Oh, you might not, because you're still new to this study. I'll send it to you. Amy, did you get it? Okay, so both of you need to be on the list. All right. So anybody else not get it? I know you don't.
I
can give it to you because I'll just give you my lesson.
I'll print it off
again.
You didn't get all that?
Well, I'll just close up and then I'll look for your thing and see if I can find it.
So the Lord saw Moses to put him to death?
Yes.
And cut off her son's foreskin.
And I pray for you that we come as Joshua did on our face. You are calling each one of us, Lord, to follow you first, to keep our eyes on you, and to serve you. And Lord, let us hear, let us see what you're saying. Let us hear with our ears what you speak. Let us not be afraid of the giants in the land that are about to come on them. And let us not, Lord, be afraid even of the study. Help us glean what you are saying to each one of us. Take our individual narrative and understand how you have made us uniquely part of your story. And how, Lord, you have purpose for each one of us. And that it is sufficient. We do not need to look at other people's story, nor do we need to be jealous. Just like with Joshua and Moses, they were two leaders. And we know what happened with Moses' people when they got jealous of his position. It cost them. Lord, let us keep our eyes on you, each one of us, supporting one another, loving one another, learning how to live together. They're about to start their life in the promised land, Lord, and we really want it to be perfect, but we know it won't be. We were already told they would disobey and turn away and listen to the idols of the land. I pray, God, that you've cut out of our weak lives the idols of this land that we hold on to, that you
clean our minds and our hearts, Lord, to truly be servants, not just to acquire knowledge, Lord, but to love you with everything that we are. And we ask this in the name of your Son.
Amen. Amen.